The Israel Report for the latest news and insights with Anthony Reich.
Anthony Reich, good morning to you. How are you?
Boker Tov Zayin Ba'Adar, the seventh day of Adar, which in the Hebrew calendar means that this is the anniversary both of the birth and of the death of Moshe Rabbeinu. Moses apparently was born in Adar Aleph and died in Adar Bet. We are, of course, in Adar Bet this year. We do have a two-month Adar. So his birth and death 120 years apart, we are led to believe, but both on the same day. And it just also coincides with the death of the oldest person in the kibbutz movement. Hayanka Gilad passed away the day before yesterday at the age of 110. And wow. She's a lady who immigrated from Lithuania. She retired apparently from her job on the kibbutz when she was 97. Worked in the shoe factory, worked in the fields, worked in the kitchen, worked as a caregiver on the kibbutz and on the kibbutz Dafna, where she was very well known. 110 years old.
That is just incredible. Wow. Yep. Okay. Other stories that we wanted to ask you about. Israel has announced a new arrangement for non-Jewish Ukrainian refugees. Give us some of the background here.
Yeah, so there was a lot of controversy surrounding Israel's treatment of the non-Jewish refugees from Ukraine because Interior Ministry had announced that refugees coming from Ukraine who were not entitled to citizenship under the law of return. And I want to emphasize that we really have two categories of refugees coming from Ukraine. Those who are entitled to citizenship under the law of return, and Israel will not do anything at all to reject them. On the contrary, Israel is doing whatever they can to facilitate their immigration to Israel, their escape from the war zone. And I know that there are so many people behind the scenes working furiously long hours to try and arrange accommodation and facilities and everything that's needed, help, humanitarian aid, food, clothing for refugees who are coming from Ukraine. Those who are entitled to citizenship under the law of return, they can simply land at Ben Gurion Airport and say, passport, that's what I want now, please. And they are literally entitled to claim an ID number and to, in the fullness of time, get themselves an Israeli passport without any further qualification necessary. Hear what Ayelet Shaked, our interior minister, was talking about yesterday, was the issue of non-Jewish Ukrainian refugees, those who are not entitled to automatically claim citizenship under the law of return. Initially, there had been an announcement of a certain quota that they would need to sign documentation that they won't stay and to lodge a deposit. The idea of the lodging of a deposit has now been entirely lifted, and a quota of 25,000 non-Jewish refugees has been agreed upon. We understand that 20,000 of those apparently already existed in Israel even before the outbreak of the conflict. So there were those who came to Israel even ahead of the outbreak of the conflict. Another 3,500 odd people, non-Jewish people, have already arrived in Israel. And the interior minister said that we would accommodate up to 25,000 people. So there's still room for another 1,500 according to that particular quota. And I guess it's going to be something of a moving target, because if there is going to be this massive outpouring of refugees and people actually seeking refuge here, I think it's going to be very, very difficult for Israel to say no to those people when they're arriving here. But the idea of the deposit has been lifted. They are going to ask people to undertake to return back to Ukraine in the fullness of time when the situation allows. Initially, a three-month period will be granted to those people to stay here and to be able to be in Israel and to use whatever facilities are available here. If that three-month period expires and the war situation continues, there is an allowance to extend that 3 months to allow people then to begin to find work here if that's what they need to do in order to survive. So a whole change to the way in which non-Jewish refugees are being treated and will be treated when they come to Israel to find refuge. And we hope that obviously other countries in Europe will be able to come to this party and to assist in order not to overburden any one particular country in terms of the number of refugees, given that Israel is already preparing for the possibility of up to 200,000 people who could potentially claim citizenship under the law of return. So let's just put all of that into context. So it's not simply 25,000, it's 25,000 on top of whoever might come here under the law of return. And just another very, very heartwarming story is the story of 10 Ukrainian children with cancer who have been brought to Israel with the help of the Israeli ambassador to Romania, David Saranga, and with the help of Schneider Children's Medical Center, brought 10 cancer-suffering children from Kiev with their parents and families to Israel to receive treatment in Petah Tikva at the Schneider Children's Medical Center. A special medical team and a special plane was sent to Romania to bring those children who'd been brought from their hospital in Kiev, and they came on that special flight, which already included medical teams on board to help those children who already have enough to deal with in their lives without having to deal with a war situation. So again, Israeli medical facilities and humanitarian assistance coming to the fore here.
Leslie says, just incredible, 25,000 people. Which other countries are doing something like this? Well, certainly not South Africa. That I can tell you for sure. Anthony, a few people saying Zayin Adar starts tonight, not today. And the 7th of Adar is tomorrow, according to
that,
my listeners.
That is a fair comment, and I accept and appreciate the feedback. Thank you for the correction.
Yeah, and Anthony was only doing that just to see that you were paying attention. That's just how these things work. President Isaac Herzog will travel to Turkey as the guest of President Erdogan. This is really unbelievable.
It is unbelievable, and you know, let's just put all of this into context. The last time that a meeting of this level was held between Israel and Turkey was back in 2008, when then Prime Minister Ehud Olmert paid a visit to Turkey and met with President Erdogan, who is still the president of Turkey today. So from that perspective, not much has changed, but a great deal has changed in the relationship between the two countries. Since then, we've had the Mavi Marmara incident. We've had the ambassadors effectively sidelined. Israel hasn't had an ambassador in Turkey since, I think, 2011. And similarly, Turkey has not had an ambassador here. President Buzhi Herzog will leave today with Michal, his wife. They will travel to Ankara. We understand that they will be hosted at a presidential dinner this evening, hosted by President Erdogan. Interestingly, tomorrow, President Erdogan is due to host the foreign ministers of Ukraine and of Russia, Sergei Lavrov, and the Ukrainian foreign minister, in the highest level bilateral talks taking place between those two countries since the outbreak of the hostilities. So President Erdogan also busy with a number of things in the background aside from this particular visit. But be that as it may, President Herzog will pursue the visit, which had been planned already for some time. We understand that the invitation for the visit came a few months ago when President Herzog assumed office, when he was elected as president, and President Erdogan decided to reach out to congratulate him and at the same time to invite him to visit Turkey, which is what's happening today. So I think this is a big moment in the relationship between Israel and Turkey. We're not expecting that ambassadors will miraculously be exchanged in the wake of this visit immediately, but it is noticeable that there was a visit earlier this week of a group of Turkish businessmen who came to Israel looking to try to extend economic contacts between the two countries to try and enhance the business collaboration. But the relationship between Israel and Turkey has, you know, really gone through some pretty low points over the last 14 years since the last time a high-level meeting between the two countries took place. We cannot forget 2009 when then Israeli President Shimon Peres was at the World Economic Forum in Davos, was on a panel with President Erdogan, and then got angrily lectured by Erdogan before Erdogan actually stormed off the stage. So, you know, those incidents will not be forgotten, but they will be set aside, I think, as part of an attempt to try to reestablish more cordial relations between Israel and Turkey. It's interesting that Turkey has decided at this particular juncture that they would like to try to set some of that aside. Israel has come under a lot of criticism and a lot of negative press from Turkey in the intervening period, and all of a sudden with the election of President Herzog, the atmosphere has changed, and so we are hopeful that this will mean good things between Israel and Turkey. President Herzog also due to visit Istanbul to visit some of the Jewish leaders and the Jewish community, which is really centered in the Turkish largest city, not the capital, because of course the capital being Ankara, but Istanbul being the largest city and the economic center of Turkey, which is also where much of the Jewish community that is still in Turkey are centered. And President Herzog has decided to take a stop, will be there tomorrow, and will make a visit, meet with members of the Jewish community. So all in all, a very, very pleasing development. President Herzog was very cautious not to alienate Greece and Cyprus, because of course they are still in a conflict situation with Turkey, particularly over Turkey's occupation of northern Cyprus. That is something which has been ongoing since the mid-70s and still continues. And so President Herzog was careful enough to visit Greece and to visit Cyprus before making his trip to Turkey, just to assure the Greek side of the Mediterranean basin that the relations between Israel and those two countries will not be affected. And of course, the whole issue of the gas pipeline very much at the forefront of discussions. We understand from Erdogan that he does wish to talk about the gas pipeline. Turkey up until now has been very much opposed to the cooperation between Greece and Turk and in Cyprus and Israel in the desire to build a gas pipeline to Europe in order to try to take advantage of the newly found gas fields in the Eastern Mediterranean and bring that gas more easily to Europe. Turkey, of course, also conflicting with Cyprus over those gas fields and the ownership of the gas fields, and Turkey certainly trying to muscle in on this particular conversation. But with the background of the war in Ukraine and the Russian gas issue, which is a major issue within Europe and around the world, this is certainly going to be an interesting discussion to be held.
Most definitely. Just absolutely remarkable that it is happening. And talking about this gas pipeline from Israel, what is the latest here?
Yeah, so I mean, the issue with the gas pipeline, the greatest issue that we've seen with the gas pipeline in recent times has not only been Turkey's opposition to it, but the fact that the U.S. administration decided to withdraw its support and funding for the gas pipeline. So that's sort of floundering at the moment without support from the U.S. And it seems that since the U.S. administration decided to withdraw their support, the idea of building this gas pipeline was sort of put onto the back burner. But now with the conflict in the Ukraine, it's come back to the front again. And there has been an interesting comment made from the CEO of Chevron, who said that the EastMed pipeline really could be the answer to Europe's dreams in terms of providing an alternative to Russian gas. And as we see the price of oil also going up against the backdrop of the Ukraine conflict, the idea of having alternative supplies is very, very important. And, you know, the problem with oil supply has also had a massive impact on the negotiations going on in Vienna with Iran over the nuclear deal. And I can see that the U.S. being significantly influenced by the prospect of being able to gain access to Iranian oil, with the price of oil going up dramatically as it is at the moment. Some people are talking about the possibility that oil could reach even $200 a barrel. The petrol price in Israel recently raised to over 7 shekels a litre. And if I was to convert that to your local currency, that's more than 35 rand a litre.
Wow, wow,
and in today's papers, I've seen comments that petrol could reach 10 shekels a litre in the very near future. 50 rand plus a litre of petrol at the pumps in Israel, that would just be a hugely dramatic in terms of affecting everything. Luckily, sure. Israel is not a country that is so dependent upon road transport, because obviously the distances are not that large, and therefore the cost of petrol, while it has a massive impact on our economy in general, doesn't have an impact as much on the transportation of goods and services backwards and forwards, because the other country is very, very small, and therefore the cost of transportation relatively small, as opposed to other countries which have massive distances, Canada, Russia, the USA, European countries which rely very much on road transportation, and the cost of petrol being a major factor. So it's going to be interesting to watch how all of that plays out and how this might have an impact on the Eastern Mediterranean pipeline, whether that's going to come back onto the front burner and people are going to be more serious about trying to develop it in the coming weeks and months.
Anthony Rach, it is 8 o'clock. Thank you. As always, we'll catch you tomorrow morning at the same time. Have a great day.